Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to WrestleChat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of WrestleChat Radio, our very first 2023 edition of WrestleChat Radio. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next 2 hours, we will be discussing the world of professional wrestling at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on the conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in our chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Today's going to be a very special show. We're not going to do a year-in-review show because everybody does those, and everybody knows what they saw. I never liked watching those year-in-review shows, nor did I like listening to people recap year-in-review shows because I remember when somebody did, yeah, we remember. We saw. So instead, what we're going to do is this. We're going to do the best and the worst in our opinion of 2022. The things we really thought was a great deal for the business of professional wrestling, the things we really thought hurt or are painful to watch. Some of them will probably be controversial because I know there are things that I truly dislike that I know a lot of people really and truly do like. So, hey, that's why we do this. You know, we can agree to disagree. Before we start, we got some news, but before we even start that, since this is a new year, I wanted to tell everyone that 2022 has been the best year for this show since we started. We have had the most listeners that we have ever had, and we want to thank you very much for that. We try very hard, believe me, to be different than a lot of the other shows. And we realize a tremendous amount of you, due to our time frame and things like that, listen to this show on demand. And I know a lot of people have said you never take those letters and you never answer the questions anymore, and you really should do that. And I promise you in 2023 we're going to get back to that. But we just wanted to say a big, huge thank you to everyone who listens to this show. We really and truly appreciate it, and we really and truly do try to give you not just the fans' perspective, but we want to give you a little peek in the business side of professional wrestling and maybe, you know, a little history and, yeah, a little fantasy booking here and there, a little just, you know, table talk about wrestling. I think we throw in a little of everything. And that's why I truly think that a lot of people enjoy this show, and we're glad that you do. Having said that, folks, let's start with some news. Now, the last show we did, which was Friday, I said that AJ Styles had injured himself, and that while we weren't sure exactly the extent of the injury, I knew someone that was there in the Hershey Arena, and they said it was definitely his ankle. They saw it hit what they thought was the steel footing that holds the barricade, and that he immediately had told either Anderson or Gallows, I forget which, that I'm hurt. And I told you then that's not really a good sign. I tried to remain optimistic, and I was saying, yeah, you know, it hurts like hell, and you think to yourself, maybe you're worse hurt than you are. But then I prefaced it and said, look, let's be honest. When you're a guy who's wrestled as long as AJ Styles, you know when you're hurt. You know when you're hurt, and you know when, oh, that hurt, but in a minute or two, I'll be fine. Or, you know, 5 minutes or two, 10, I'll be fine. From, I'm hurt. So when I heard that AJ Styles had told, I think it was Anderson, I'm hurt, I knew it wasn't good news. And it's not really good news. It's partially good news. He did break his ankle, which is exactly what we said. So remember, all these other places that were running around saying he's not really hurt, or he broke his leg, or he pulled a hamstring, we were the ones telling you from the very beginning, just moments after we started the show, that he probably broke his ankle. However, it does not need surgery, which is going to shorten the amount of time. It's still going to be a substantial amount of time. And AJ Styles took to Twitter to thank everybody for concern and saying that this will be the longest period he will be out of professional wrestling. And that is a shame. That is a damn shame. especially at a house show. But it just shows you, folks, it can happen. It can happen at any time, and it can happen to people who certainly are among the most highly skilled in the business. So we wish AJ Styles a speedy recovery. And, you know, Mike, he doesn't deserve the injury, but he probably deserves the time off.
He probably deserves the knee time off. And this, I don't want to be too morbid on this, but this could be a good thing in terms of this could actually speed up what probably should happen in the split up of Judgment Day, and maybe you could actually have. Him, if he's going to be out 6 to 8 months, whatever, AJ, you know, maybe you could maybe work a gimmick where work a deal where, you know, he for at least for short term, Finn Balor takes over the OC for a little while, you know, you could do that. I mean, this doesn't have to be a negative thing, you know.
Well, the good news, I think we're looking more at maybe 3 months. 2.5 months, and maybe a little longer to just work his way back into, because he has a style that, you know, he uses his feet as a springboard and things a lot. He's going to have that ankle in really good shape. So, you know, maybe 3 months. That doesn't mean he might not, you know, be around. He might still be around, because this is a hard thing for Anderson Gallows and Mia Yim. Because despite the fact that Anderson Gallows are great wrestlers, as everybody knows, and Mia Yim is certainly a very competent hand, it was AJ Styles who was the lifeblood of that. You take AJ Styles out of this mix, completely out of the picture, and I don't know if they survive. I don't know if they thrive. I don't know if they're popular. I don't know. So hopefully what we'll see is an angle where AJ Styles can still maybe make a couple of the shows, TV taping, maybe come down on a crutch or, you know, something. So he's still around so that you can still have the build-ups or whatever. Because without him, you know, I don't know. I don't know if this whole OC thing is going to work as good as they hope. Now, you're right about Finn Balor. I wish they would take him completely away from the Judgment Day. But they've already got him booked to fight Edge at WrestleMania, so that's probably not going to happen, at least until after WrestleMania. So I think it's just going to be status quo for a little while, but I do hope that AJ Styles realizes, and there's no luck, by the way, no luck at all. You know, AJ Styles and the OC get up there and get rolling, and they're supposed to be a big deal, and then the OC get fired. Now they come back, and they're supposed to be a big part of the lineup, and AJ gets hurt. It's like, God, there's just no luck here with these guys. And as good of wrestlers as they are, they don't connect with the crowd like AJ Styles. They just don't. Listen to the crowd. They always chant, we want AJ or AJ Styles, AJ Styles. They don't chant for anybody else. Going to be a little difficult. Second thing we want to talk about is the skit that they did with Dominic and Rhea Ripley and Dominic getting arrested on Christmas Eve. It is very clear. Now they mentioned, oh, go call Finn, go call Damian. It is very clear that they do not want these guys in these skits. It is very clear that they do not, they are trying very hard to isolate Dominic and Rhea from the rest, because they are very cognizant of the fact that that's really the only ones anybody cares about. This experiment with the Judgment Day has not been successful other than to bring Dominic Mysterio into his own. And I love that people are like, oh, wow, you know, Dominic Mysterio's turned out to be better than we thought he was going to be. Did you really think he was going to flop? When he spent his whole life, his father was Rey Mysterio. Did you really think he was going to be a total bust? He just needed time. He needed time to just get the feel of how things are going and And, you know, he was stuck with a gimmick where he was supposed to be a real daddy's boy and clean-cut little Ray Ray, and, you know the deal. Now he's getting his feet wet a little bit more, and you're seeing that, you know, all of that generational whatever, that pays off. That's not some guy who, you know, walked out of high school and said, I think I want to be a wrestler. My God, he was in WrestleMania doing a part in WrestleMania when he was what? 9, 10? How old was he? Not very. So, look, I'm not surprised. I knew Dominic would work out eventually. I knew he'd always have the wrestling skill. It was the look, it was the attitude, and it was the mic skills that I said, this is going to take a while. The look and the attitude, that'll come, whether it's heel or face. The mic skills, well, you know, I was worried that may never come. But no, he's good enough. He's actually good enough. And I think he's going to get better. So that's good. It wasn't like Ray was brilliant. So he's good enough. He's competent on the mic. These two have chemistry. Real, honest to God chemistry. The other two do not. They just don't. And I like them. I'm not a big Finn Balor fan, but I do think Damian Priest they could do something with. And Finn Balor is better as a face. I always said he's better as a face, and he just is. He's the world's smallest heel. I don't like that. Damian, you could do something with, but they're just stuck with this. We don't know what we want to be. Are we goth kids? Well, Finn Balor a little too old to be a goth kid. And so is Damian Priest. Dominic Mysterio isn't. Are we this dark, cultish whatever? All right, well, Finn don't act like that. What are we? And they're kind of lost in what we are. And in the midst of trying to find who they are, Dominic and Rhea found who they were. And it's this weird sort of dominant, female-dominant relationship where she sort of wears the pants and he kind of walks the walk and does what she wants. It's a very interesting dichotomy, and I really think they just need to be by themselves. Totally by themselves. And I think, Todd, this week they proved they can handle this by themselves.
I mean, absolutely right there. Like you said, with this Judgment Day thing with Priest, Dominic, and Balor there, Balor and Priest are just don't fit right as goffy kids. And Dominic, there he does not fit as a goth person.
Even if it's not goth so much as it's just, it fits. Dominic works because he's a little younger. And this angle is sort of, see, if you want to take this angle to really dark places, then it doesn't matter how old you are, was doing it, and how old is Edge. And he was good at it. But they were taking that to a much darker place. Now they've sort of lightened this up into sort of a, well, we're a good old boys club with a girl. And she's a little weird, and she's a very dominant woman, and she dominates the guy that she likes, and that's Dominic Mysterio, who needs a little dominance or whatever, and bringing him along. Okay, well, I don't know what that's supposed to be. There was a much darker persona when Edge was there, so I don't know what they're supposed to be, but we'll get into that later. I think they did a really good job. Now, of course, the big news is that Charlotte Flair showed back up, and everybody lost their mind and said, Jesus Christ, they gave her the belt the minute she showed up. Can't wait to turn into WrestleChat on Sunday and hear Marcus go crazy. You're not going to hear me go crazy. I don't think it was that bad of an idea this time. Yeah, I hate it when things like that happen. I hated it when it happened with Becky Lynch at WrestleMania. But this one, I don't think, was all that bad. I'm going to tell you why. First off, let's give credit where credit is due. Ronda Rousey deserves all the credit in the world for people, and I'm one of them. I fully admit I'm one of them, who on her first run was brutal to her. And rightfully so. She couldn't wrestle. and she didn't understand it at all. So to say, well, I'm a Roddy Piper fan, and I grew up watching wrestling, well, you didn't learn anything because you didn't understand it at all. She understands it now, and she's getting really good at it. This match was probably her best match that I've seen her in, certainly this year. And it came with Raquel Rodriguez. It didn't come with, like, a huge, huge name who was carrying her. This is the first time I think Ronda Rousey was really calling a match and carrying a match, and she did it really well. And she's now really getting into being able to do moves, understanding the order of moves, understanding how to sell, not overselling, not underselling. She's got this down there. And I think Ronda Rousey could be a very, very, very strong asset for the WWE going forward. Now, as far as Charlotte Flair coming back, Ronda Rousey still has this to hang her hat on. Okay, I let my ego get the best of me, and I put the belt on the line when I probably shouldn't have. I just was in a really hard-fought match with a very powerful woman, Raquel Rodriguez, and I just squeaked by. And then here comes Charlotte Flair out, who I have no idea was even back in the building or the state. Took my eye off the ball for a second, and I got pinned. But in the rematch, I'll know who's coming my way, and there'll be a rematch. Now, there are some rumors, and some people are saying they're not true, so let's take it with a grain of salt. There are some rumors that Ronda Rousey was supposed to fight Becky Lynch and refused. Said she didn't want to work with her. If that's the case, and that is found to be true, that's unacceptable. Absolutely 100% unacceptable. It's one thing if you say, well, I don't want to work with some like minor person who has screwed up a lot, or I don't necessarily want to work with a girl who's kind of green and, you know, it's going to make me look bad. I get that. This is Becky Lynch. This is one of the top stars, if not the top women star in your division. Yeah, you're working with her. If we say you're working with her. Now, as much as I just praised Ronda Rousey and getting better as a professional wrestler in the ring, she has to start getting better as a professional wrestler outside the ring. Seth Rollins does not like Matt Riddle and has made no bones about not liking Matt Riddle. And has said on one occasion, I don't have any interest in working with Matt Riddle. He worked with Matt Riddle and said, I don't have a problem anymore working with that. I'll work with Matt Riddle. I'm a professional. I'll work with whoever. I don't care. We've told you on this show, Booker T and Batista got into a fist fight, a serious one, backstage in their heyday. And Booker T to this day says, if Vince McMahon had said you're working together the next night, both Batista and I, we wouldn't have blinked an eye. We wouldn't have had any protest. We would have been, okay, well, that's just the way things are. We don't like each other, well. Too bad. We're working with each other, and we would have been professional about it. Ronda's got to, if that's the case, that's Ronda's downfall. She is not, just because she's Ronda Rousey and she's getting a lot better, she's not in a position right now, Mike, in my opinion, where you can say, I'm not working with top stars. She's not Brock Lesnar.
Right. Right, and that's the thing. I mean, look, remember, Brock Lesnar did not want to work with what's his name when he was holding the championship, right?
Jinder, yeah.
Jinder Mahal, yeah. So, but he can call his shots. Brock Lesnar has been around for how long before this happened? You know,
long
so
time.
He can call his shots. You know, so he can call his shots. Ronda Rousey hasn't been around that long. Even though she's gotten better, she hasn't gotten around. She hasn't been around that long. And yeah, you know, she basically, I don't want to say carried it, because I tell you what, you know, as good as we think she is, what's her name is improving every, Raquel Rodriguez, whatever,
yeah.
Is improving every time we see her. She's getting
yep.
to the point of where you're looking at her and you're seeing, well, this is a serious contender. It doesn't matter if she wins or loses, she's still a contender. And as far as Charlotte winning, we know she was coming at. We knew she was coming back, number one, and we know for a fact, probably, that they want her to become the 16-time champion. So she has to win it at some point and lose it again at some point.
Yeah, and I think with WrestleMania, you know, theoretically right around the corner in terms of you have to start booking things, I think that since Ronda said I'm totally out of working with Becky Lynch, if that is the case, then they had to move quick. Now, some people are saying, no, she didn't refuse to work with Becky Lynch. She said she'd rather not. And the WWE, who wanted her to work with Becky Lynch, said, you know what, maybe it's better if we have Charlotte come back, win the belt, and we'll go with a, maybe that match, or maybe we'll go with, there's some talk about her possibly moving to Raw, and possibly her and Rhea Ripley going at it for a championship, maybe Ronda winning from Bianca before WrestleMania, or Rhea winning before, I don't know. But this all stems from just a change of plans because it was supposed to be Becky Lynch. Aside from that, talk a little bit about John Cena. The thing about John Cena that I do like is this. I honestly and truly believe either he's a way better actor than he gets credit for, or I honestly and truly believe he does indeed love professional wrestling. I'm not 100% sure that John Cena is the type of guy who ever get professional wrestling out of his blood. I think The Rock would. You know, I think The Rock comes back to promote his movies. I think John Cena comes back because he's like, I still want to do it. I can't as much as I did, but I still kind of want to. Because he always looks like he's having fun, and he always looks like he's trying to make you have fun. So that's a good thing. Now, having said that, he didn't do much, and he didn't look all that great doing it. It's really just more of a thrill for the fans than it is seeing that he hasn't lost a step, because he clearly has. Clearly has. And then that's not his fault. He's been out the ring as long as he's been out of the ring. He's not going to get in there and be, like, super sharp. He's just not going to be. So, but it was exciting to see him. It was fun. Cena's one of those guys, Todd, that it's weird because the crowd always used to be very divided with him, but now that he's kind of like gone away and comes back, pretty much the crowd is, you know, all on his side to see him.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, that's a guy who loves the business of professional wrestling. Well, like you said, he comes back, not to promote the movie, he just come back to see the fans perform in front of him, and this is the guy who still wants to do this.
Yeah, he looks like he's having fun, Mike, and even though he didn't do too much, it still was a big thing for the fans, obviously.
Right, and this is one of these guys that in 10 years, if he wants to come back and have a one-off match in 10 years, hey, let him do it, you know? Because you know you're going to kind of get quality out of him at that point. Yeah, he's going to be, what, mid-50s at that point, you know? But you could probably get away with that with John Cena because he loved the sport so much, you know? I think you're right. He loves the sport, and that's the thing. Now, one other thing before you leave me, I've been tooling around the internet a little bit, and I've seen where the rumors are that Kairi Sane is coming back. That could be
possibly for the women's rumble.
Yeah, that could be interesting. If you're gonna run a feud between Asuka and Io Sky, and Kairi Sane comes back, it becomes even more interesting there because she got ties to both women.
Yeah, there's a story to be told there. There's no question about that. I mean, we'll wait and see. We also saw who I guess is Uncle Howdy. Didn't have the same mask and didn't come out to the same music, but I guess it's supposed to be Uncle Howdy. And I can't believe how many people started just throwing the wildest guesses out there. There are people saying it was Edge, not Edge. Yeah, I know. When he kneeled down in that one position, he looked like Edge with the mask on because of the hair and the way the mask shapes his face. But Edge is like 6'7" or 6". The guy was nowhere close to 6'7" or 6". If I had my guess, I would say that was Bo. I'm almost guaranteeing it was Bo. I tried to get sources that I have to tell me flat out. Nobody's telling me flat out. Nobody knows. Obviously, some people know, but they're not spreading it very far. It's either Bo or Vincent. And I'm leaning toward Bo because I looked at the facial structure of both of them, and then I took the close-up of that picture, and look, I would say that's Bo. So apparently we're going to get some kind of a Bo Dallas as Uncle Howdy and versus Bray Wyatt thing. And I guess the gimmick is they're going to try to drag the evil back out of Bray Wyatt. Here is what I do want to say about that whole setup. I hope Eli Drake does not get caught in the middle of this as some kind of a punching bag, because he's very, very good at what he does. I was surprised how good he was. Now, there's a big, big albatross about working with Bray Wyatt, where people say, I love Bray. He's a really nice guy behind the scenes. He's super, super creative. He's a guy who understands the business. He's safe. All of that stuff. But when I work with him, because of the characters he has, it does me no good. Whether I win or I lose, it does me no good. It seems to be like a void, you know, where nothing good happens if you fight Bray Wyatt. Nothing good happens. Not because you lost. It puts you in a feud that's just weird, and, you know, it throws people off. I hope that doesn't happen to Eli, because he's handling this differently than I think other people do. He went in there and said something very unique and said, look, you're not fooling anybody. You know, we know who you are. We know what you are. We know what you're trying to do. I'm not falling for that crap. And I'm here to challenge you. And then legitimately looked shocked and said, what the hell is going on? When he finally realized that might not be Bray Wyatt's lackey, because he just attacked Bray Wyatt. And maybe Bray isn't the guy who attacked me after all. Now, that will be interesting, because this, if it turns out that the powers that be said, maybe we don't want to waste Eli Drake just yet on a terrible 4-minute Bray Wyatt squash match, maybe something's going to happen in this match. Maybe Eli's not losing this match. This would be perfectly fine for Bray Wyatt to lose this match with the interference of Uncle Howdy or even other characters. That would be perfectly acceptable. Where Bray Wyatt just says, I'm not going to be allowed to succeed with these people. They're never going to let me be this person. And then eventually, my opinion, and it's only my opinion, because this is really I'm telling you, they're closely guarding this Bray Wyatt thing. Obviously, Triple H knows. Obviously, there's a couple other people who know where this is going. Almost nobody else does. That includes Alexa Bliss, who recently said, I'm not sure the direction they're taking this. They you know, obviously, I'm going to be involved in some way, I think, because they keep doing that, whatever, but I've not been notified of it. They are keeping this very, very close. But in my opinion, what's going to happen is they're going to keep this Bray Wyatt thing up where he can't win trying to be this guy. And when they think we're going to pull out the evil Bray Wyatt, and they are going to pull out the evil Bray Wyatt, but he's going to come for them instead of join them. And I think the evil Bray Wyatt's going to be the Fiend again. I think the culmination of this is it's going to go back to being the Fiend. That's what everybody wants to see. There's going to be that moment. And people are going to be like, holy crap. That's where I think this is probably going. And I think Alexa Bliss is going to have some key to how to bring the Fiend back. She's the one who destroyed him. And I think there must be some secret to how to revive him. That's where I think this is going. That's my best guess. Either way, a very interesting SmackDown. A lot of stuff going around. And something else that we should be patting ourselves on the back for, and if you listen to this show, I'm not afraid to pat ourselves on the back. You know why I'm not afraid to pat ourselves on the back? Because so many people are not afraid to laugh at us and tell us you don't know what you're talking about. What did we tell you about the top dollar and this whole situation? We said they feel like heels, they act like heels, they will never get over as baby faces doing this. It's never going to happen. If you're smart, you immediately turn them heels. You could see them being annoying heels who think they're better than everybody else, but they're not. What happened? We see the beginnings of it. This is a good move. And I'll tell you something else that's a good move. Not being afraid to use that ridiculous over-the-top rope disaster and admit it, acknowledge it, and say, yeah, that's a terrible, terrible move, stupid thing to do. In doing that, it makes it feel more realistic. Now, I know some people are going to say, well, but I felt sorry for him, too. Everybody was picking on him about it. Yeah, but they were doing it kind of good-naturedly. Nobody was really saying, man, you suck. They were just kind of saying, you're a little bit big to be doing that. Like Ricochet, kind of his point was, maybe people won't laugh at me now, you know, and say, well, that's easy stuff. And what he really kind of meant was like, well, I can't do what you do. I'm nowhere near as big as you. I'm not powerful like you. So, you know, I can do that stuff, but you should maybe not try it. And he got real mad and shoved him and stuff. So this is the beginnings, Mike, and we called this. We said, I don't know what you're doing, but you're never going to make this group a face group or a hugely popular group. They belong in the heel category, and voila.
And it came, and here's the deal, it came in a skit where one of the most popular teams was there doing their thing. And that was the Street Profits. You cannot deny how popular the Street Profits are. Even though they kind of cycled them down a little bit, they're still very popular. And so, you know, when you got the Street Profits doing what they do usually do, and basically referring to that botched move, you know. And then they say, okay, yeah, that happened. You know, it was a good segment altogether, and you're right. We, over the past, 7, 8, 10 years or whatever, however long the show is going on, we're like Barry Horowitz, patting ourselves on the back because we say something and 6 or 8 months later, that thing comes to pass, you know? And this is just the latest incarnation of, We've been saying for how many months now that these even before they left, even before they got fired, right?
Yep.
We were saying that they should be heels, even before they got fired. So,
absolutely. First time they came out, I said, if this is the attitude they're going to have, if this is the way they're walking out, this is the way they're going to dress and the mannerism and everything else, I'm sorry, that's not faces. That's heels. And you already got the Street Profits. You already had the New Day. Why do you want another face team like this who are like sort of that hip-hop culture, sort of, you know, funny, charming, whatever, and it's not necessary. These guys should have been thugs. These guys should have been like, you know, we're not playing with you. You guys can play with your stupid unicorn horns and your little red solo cups. We ain't playing with you. We're the real deal. You know, we're the ones you're pretending to be. I always said that's the attitude they should have came in with, is we're the ones you pretend to be. And when the real deal shows up, then it ain't funny no more, right? People would have liked that, and they would have hated Hit Row. So maybe the best thing that ever happened to Hit Row, who were on the chopping block, I'm telling you right now, they were on the chopping block. The very best thing that might have happened was that Top Dollar flubbed that move, because that gave them all the reason they needed to say, maybe we can do something with this. Maybe this is the beginning of a heel turn. Maybe he can have no sense of humor about himself and shove Ricochet. You notice he shoved the smallest guy, right? Shove Ricochet and, you know, really get on him about it. Now, this team misses Swerve Strickland tremendously. He was the one with the charisma and the good moves and all that stuff. They definitely miss him. But I could see them maybe having a new life as heels. Because you just tell this guy, you tell Top Dollar, you never do a move like that again ever. And as a heel, you don't have to. You're going to be picking people up, body slamming people, headbutting people, running them into the friggin' turnbuckles, throwing them outside the ring, hitting them with a chair. That's about all you're doing, my friend. Let the other guy do the athletics. You do the power. That's it. And your manager, she'll cheat for you. Good enough. It's good enough. So, Todd, once again, we nailed it, man. We nailed it once again.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, this Hit Row thing was not working on the main roster. Like you said in the beginning, they were not ready to be main roster material. Now they're sort of going to turn them heel, like they're doing right now with Swerve Strickland. They started his own wrestling stable over in AEW. The sort of the same thing, like thuggish stable as well.
Yes, exactly. That's right. And that's what these guys should have been. That's what these guys should have been. Because at very least, Top Dollar is big enough to be intimidating. So if you had the others run their mouth and he just be sort of the quieter one who just, like, if crap goes down, he's going to be grabbing on you. That's okay. That might work. Trying to make them these happy rappers who are like, we're rappers, but we're not gangster rappers. We're just fun rappers who rap about fun. So that's never going to work. We knew from the beginning that wasn't going to work, and they should have known from the beginning that wasn't going to work. There wasn't one thing in their body language, their attitude, their dress, their mannerism, anything that made anyone think they could get over as faces. Heels, yes. So we'll see. We'll see. Another bad thing that came out of this, however, is once again proving my point that you kind of got to stick to what you know. Ricochet, who is a phenomenal athlete, devoid of personality as far as I'm concerned, but a phenomenal athlete when it comes to body control and doing all of his flips and his dives and his, you know, those moves, he don't have to use a chair much. So Knucklehead runs in with a chair, which he sort of has to do because he's small. So, you know, he can't be running in and knocking the hell out of Imperium by himself. So he comes in with a chair, tries to swing it at Gunther as Gunther's outside the ring, and cracks Gunther directly in the friggin' top of the head. Busted him open. Had to put a towel over him. He was bleeding. I'm sorry. There's no excuse for it. I'm sorry. You can say accident all you want. You know what an accident is? An accident's when he does the flip and he's a little bit off and he elbows you a little bit or he hits you a little in a position that you don't like. That's an accident. When you get overly rambunctious with a chair because, oh, boy, this is my first time that I get to clean house, so I'm going to be really swinging that chair and be wild with it. Yeah, and what'd you do? You crack somebody in the freaking top of the head and busted them open. That's why you don't do moves like that. That's why you are a aerobatic-type wrestler. And you know you're an aerobatic-type wrestler, so I don't know why you get overly zealous with a chair. Now, you could have handed that chair to Stone Cold Steve Austin or Kevin Owens or Roman Reigns or anybody you wanted to hand that chair to, and Sheamus, whoever, never would have touched Never would have touched him. So for a guy who has such great body control, how come he can't control the chair? Because he don't use it. He didn't learn to wrestle that way. How many times has he used the chair swinging it like that? Probably first time. Maybe first time. I don't know. I mean, he might have hit somebody with a chair. It's different when you're on the mat and they're hitting you in the back and they got all the time in the world to aim. It's another thing when you're chasing people out with it and you're supposed to be swinging it. You got to be awfully careful. Now, I'm sure Gunther's not going to be like, yeah, it's your fault, F you. I'm sure he's going to say, I should have been a little farther away or whatever, because that's what they do. But it's Ricochet's fault. You're the guy with a chair in your hand. It's your fault. End of conversation. So I don't think he's injured badly or anything, Mike, but that just goes to show you why some people shouldn't be using chairs.
Right, and that's the thing. I mean, if you wanted to have him come in there with, like, a baseball bat or something like that, fine. Give him one of them rubber baseball bats and say, have at it, you know. I mean, that would have been fine with me. But this is a guy that we know what he is. You know, you would have, like you said, somebody like, Stone Cold or, hell, even what's his name, Top Dollar. You could buy him, not a 190-pound guy, you know, not that guy. I mean, to me, Ricochet needs to – he had more charisma when he was under the mask as Prince Puma than he has now.
He definitely did. And look, if I had him running in and people say – if somebody said to me, well, he can't run in without a chair or a weapon because he's too small, I would have been like, no, that's the whole point. Let him run in. The first guy's going to try to take him out with a clothesline. He'll duck under it, leapfrog over the second guy, dropkick Gunther out of the ring, who was confident that the other two guys could stop him, hit the ropes on the other side and do the body splash on the two guys outside the ring. That's fine. He can do all that, and he'll do it perfectly. And I guarantee nobody gets hurt. I don't know who put the chair in his hand and said, you know, you can do that. Well, he can't, obviously. Or Gunther wouldn't have ended up with a knot the size of a basketball on the top of his head. So, I don't know. Also, should mention that Solo Sikoa looked great in his match against Sheamus. Love Sheamus, don't like seeing him, you know, lose, but they did protect Sheamus in the loss in the sense that there was interference. So, that's fairly good. And, of course, we had that ending where Roman Reigns is not going to be too happy with Sami Zayn, and the last thing the announcer said was, we'll see how this works out for Sami Zayn next week. That is what's called in the business, folks, a tease. Those are good things. Those are all good things. So for that reason, I'm going to give this show an A-. I think this show was really, really good. I'm sorry about the flubs, and I know a lot of people don't like Charlotte Flair, and I know it rubbed everybody the wrong way that she won the title. But if that was a necessity, it's a necessity. There's nothing you can do about it. So I'm giving it an A-, Mike. What's your thoughts?
I got to give it an A- as well. And I do like I do like Charlotte's new ring gear.
Yeah, very good. Yep, me too. I do too. And, you know, they did the right thing in the sense that Ronda was getting on people's nerves, so Charlotte got the pop. So obviously they want Charlotte, I guess, to be a face. Will this hurt her being a face? Well, I don't know. I mean, there's always going to be some people who don't cheer for Charlotte Flair. I don't know why Charlotte Flair is disliked. I've yet to figure it out. I've yet to figure out why Charlotte Flair is disliked. Arguably, she's the one person in the WWE that really looks like a female wrestler. I mean, you could say Bianca Belair does too. Very athletic and stuff. But, I mean, and, yeah, now probably Raquel Rodriguez. Certainly Ronda has the whatever. But, I mean, Charlotte just, in pure wrestling, maybe not athleticism, but in pure wrestling, once again, daughter of Ric Flair and stuff, that's not wasted. In pure wrestling, she might still be the best one there. She's damn close to it. No, she doesn't have the athleticism of Bianca Belair. No, she doesn't have the striking tactics and the exuberance of Asuka. No, she doesn't, have that charisma of a Becky Lynch. But she has all of that ability. She has the look. And people say, well, she's arrogant and this and that. Well, you like CM Punk. How much more arrogant could anybody be than CM Punk? So I don't want to hear it. If you're a CM Punk fan and you tell me you don't like Charlotte Flair, then you're a hypocrite. Because the bottom line is, if you don't like her because you think she's arrogant or you think whatever, well, come on. Now, I heard a story, and apparently it's true, that Charlotte and Becky really don't like each other much anymore. And that's a shame. You know, they were good friends. And I heard, you know, maybe a little bit of it's just kayfabe, but now I'm hearing different. Now I'm hearing from some people who are friends with people who are friends with family that, no, there was a big problem because Charlotte Flair, when Becky started really becoming the person, Charlotte Flair kind of felt slighted that this is sort of my spot. I'm supposed to be the top girl and a woman, and here comes Becky, and she just caught fire in a bottle, and all of a sudden she's it, and the fans are all going crazy, and she felt a little whatever. And, you know, that's natural. There's jealousies that go on in professional wrestling constantly and people trying to undermine each other. I hate to see it break up a friendship. But, I mean, listen, she's still one of the best you got, and I just do not understand the hate for her. She busts her ass every time she's in the ring. I don't know what you want. I guarantee you Charlotte Flair didn't say, I'm not coming back unless I beat Ronda Rousey in 1 minute. Do you think when Charlotte Flair did the I Quit match and quit, do you honestly think this wasn't planned at some point? That there wasn't going to be a receipt? Of course there was going to be a receipt. So, and Ronda likes Charlotte. I don't know where I've heard people, oh, you know, Ronda and Charlotte have a very tenuous relationship. No, they don't. They're friends. So that's why they work well together. So I'm not even going to, I don't give it points off for that. I know some people were really turned off by that. Now, I do know this. There were some people who wrote to me and said, you know, my kid stayed up really late to watch John Cena, and he did two moves. What can I tell you guys? They're trying to save him. He's going to do another match. Don't worry. Your kids will see him do a whole match. I guarantee he's doing a whole match. But he's not going to get hurt in this one. So he's not doing anything to jeopardize that whole match. I'm telling you right now. He'll pull the stops out when the time comes. And this wasn't the time. So he did what he had to do. Todd, what's your rating?
I got to give it an A minus as well.
Yeah, I thought it was a really entertaining show. I really did. Good for them. One of the better ones of the year, I think. Really felt like it felt important. There was a lot of things in there that was like, oh, that's important. From the Bray Wyatt confrontation finally with Uncle Howdy, Charlotte Flair returning, John Cena coming back. Looks like a critical point in the Sami Zayn bloodline relationship. There was a lot of things going on. So good for them. All right, let's get to our best and worst things of the year. This should be very interesting. And we're just going to start, we'll start, I guess, with, we'll do one worst, one best, one worst, one best. That's probably the best way to do it. I know what the worst thing of the year was for me. I have several, but I'm sure the other guys will bring some up too. The worst thing of the year for me was the media scrum that followed the AEW pay-per-view in which CM Punk literally used the opportunity to air his dirty laundry in a place it did not belong and run down a company that probably made him a millionaire again. Now, I've said before on this show, and I'll say it again, everything CM Punk said about AEW, I don't know about Colt Cabana. I don't know about any of that stuff. I don't know whether he was lying through his teeth or all that stuff is right. I don't know. I do know what he said about AEW was correct. But I also know it's not the place you do it. You know what this reminds me of? Let's say you worked in a, I don't know, a retail store, and your manager promoted you. You're going to be the head of this department. You're going to have these other guys working under you, but you're going to be like the top guy. But in the other department, I got other guys running. And you don't like the other guys, or you don't like the way they're running things. And when your manager asks you, how's things going? Fine. Everything's fine. Oh, good. And then corporate comes for a meeting, and you speak up and say, oh, my manager sucks. He made me the manager of his department, but everybody else he hired is terrible. He don't know what he's doing. The whole place is falling apart. That's stabbing the guy who gave you your job in the back. If you really thought that that's what was going on, why didn't you tell him before the big shots got there? Well, that's sort of what happened. Here's the lights, camera, and reporters, and it's like, okay, now's the time I'll pick to say Tony Khan has no idea what he's doing, and he's hired a bunch of idiots to run this federation. Totally inappropriate. Doesn't matter if what you say is true. There's a time and a place. There's a time and a place. This was not the time and it was not the place, and it led to the worst publicity. This was the key moment for AEW where things started going sour. And once again, what did we say on this show when they first said we're probably hiring CM Punk? I said, this is going to backfire like a son of a bitch. Because everywhere this guy goes, unless he gets every single thing he wants, the second he wants it, freaking place up. And he did. And they've not recovered from this. They've not recovered from this. This divided the locker room. Then there were people who said, well, I like CM Punk. He was okay to me. If you don't like him, there's something wrong with you. And the other side saying, yeah, F you. You see what he just did? We're not putting up with that. Then there's half of the guys in the back saying, oh, we're going to try to get a petition to bring him back and get things going. There's Chris Jericho saying, well, I'm getting the petition that he's not coming back. I'm not working with him. We don't want him here. Oh, great. You've got a really good locker room now. And who's it thanks to? All because Phil Brooks, not CM Punk, Phil Brooks, couldn't wait till the cameras were off and tell Tony Khan, we got a problem. And I think we need to go address it and clear the air and get things done so that we can all move on with making this federation what you want it to be. You didn't need to air that in front of the whole entire world. You didn't need to use that as your personal springboard to say, Colt Cabana lives with his mom and he owes me money and he doesn't even have insurance and is there. What? Who are you? What are you, 12? Terrible. It had to be the biggest bitch moment. I'm not saying the Young Bucks should have, you know, stormed to the locker room and caused a fist fight. I'm not saying that either. They're no better. So they didn't do it in front of the whole media, and they weren't about to do it. If CM Punk came out there and said, I'm glad I won tonight, I'm looking forward to fighting MJF, this is a big moment in AEW history, and blah, 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 I don't think the Young Bucks were storming the dressing room. So absolutely CM Punk caused it. And I think that the poison that injected is still flowing through the veins of AEW. It's still divided people. After that, we saw the Andrade fight with Sammy Guevara, and it's getting out of hand. And now we find out, not to convolute too many things into one, but now we find out that Dragon Lee, who's been hired by WWE to go to NXT, and he's the brother of Roush, who's over there in AEW. AEW made him a better offer. AEW actually offered him a considerable amount more money. And he said no. Think about that for a minute. You see what injecting poison does, folks? Once that poison starts flowing, no matter where it comes from, starts to infect everybody who comes near it. And the next thing you know, That same group who said, I don't want to work for the WWE, it's toxic, are starting to say, I don't want to work for AEW, it's toxic. I think this was the worst thing that happened in wrestling this year, Mike.
It is, and that's the thing. And think about this, Marcus. We haven't really gotten into the whole thing about Cody and when the power got taken away and all that stuff, you know, and what happened. But I would wager to say Cody had some misgivings about them signing him, CM Punk. And he voiced those misgivings, and that's what eventually led – that might have been what eventually led to him not being in AEW anymore, because he was in WWE at the time when CM Punk was there, and he knew about the poison. He knew about it.
Yeah, well, you're right. I don't know how he feels about it. That could very well be the case. But let me tell you something about people like telling you I've known people like that. These are people who are self-obsessed, and they want everything their way. But they're smart enough to know they have to have a couple of allies. So what they do is they pick out the most innocuous guys, guys that aren't any threat to them, guys that they know are never going to really challenge them in any way for a top spot or anything, and he's your best friend. And he says all kinds of nice things about you. That way, when he dicks over everybody else who does have that and goes and makes the puppy dog eyes at you and says, I don't know, I was nice to you. And those guys say, yeah, man, he's a really nice guy, man. He came over and said, I'm a great wrestler, and he looks forward to maybe working with me one day and stuff. Why are you picking on him? He's okay. See how people work like that? They're very devious people. CM Punk's a very devious person. I've known people like that. It's like sociopathic. You literally say, I need to pick a few people out here who are no threat to me, and I'll praise them and pat them on the head and give them a cookie. And when the time comes for people to speak up, they'll speak up for me. Now, I'm no fan of the Young Bucks. I know they're punks. I knew they were punks when they refused to acknowledge Booker T when they walked right by him. You don't do that shit in wrestling. So I know they're punks. They probably deserve to get their ass beat, but that was not the time. That was not the place. Hold an office meeting. Everything that CM Punk said, if that had leaked, they said, guess what? After the event, CM Punk had a meeting with Tony Khan and the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega, and listen to what Punk said. And if I found out, well, that wasn't supposed to leak, and Punk said that, I would have said, Punk's absolutely right. He is 100% dead on the money right. But that was not the place to do it, because that started that ball rolling. And as soon as that ball started to roll, all of a sudden AEW is not the place a lot of people want to work anymore. Lo and behold, I'm going to get into more AEW a little bit later, because I got some views on that that you may be interested in. Tom, what do you think is the worst thing that happened this year in professional wrestling?
Oh, I'm going with the CM Punk thing. That's obviously the worst. It's the 800-pound gorilla. We had to address it. We spent a lot of time on it in the past, but this was something that shouldn't have been done at a press conference. Tony Khan might be the dumbest man in the world. He just got a pocket full of money, and he hands CM Punk millions and millions of dollars. How many times did he wrestle? And then he punks him out in a press conference. This is what happens when you're the guy in charge of the Wrestling Federation, and you're their best friend, and kumbaya, and sing songs around the campfire. No, that's not how it works, because Vince McMahon didn't do that. This is almost the same thing that destroyed WCW. Because Eric Bischoff became friends with Hulk Hogan and Kevin Nash, yep, and all the, you know, the bigger names, and they walked right all over him. And
yeah, that's a good point, and that's a fair point. And it is a little bit similar, except that You know, I can't help but think sometimes we'll get into it about AEW, so I'll save it. Anyway, Mike, you got a different worst thing that happened in wrestling this year, or is this, in your opinion, it as well?
No, this is it. This is it. I mean, there are some people that say bad any PR is good PR. Not this.
No. Well, we see it. I mean, look what it did to AEW. And now, just as I predicted too, by the way, and you guys predicted it with me, the niche AEW crowd is starting to like, it's old news now. I warned you, remember? I said it's going to be a fidget spinner. Everybody wanted a fidget spinner for a month or 3 months. Now these guys who weren't dyed-in-the-wool wrestling fans anyway, they were new wrestling fans, are saying, oh, I don't know. You don't know if I like it anymore. I liked it when everybody could just do their own thing and be what they wanted to be and do what they want to do, and nobody told them what to do. Well, you can't have that. Otherwise, it's just chaos. You got to stop trying to reinvent the wheel. Wrestling is just wrestling, and it's a very, very simple. Wrestling is so simple. I probably have said this 1,000 times on this show. I hear from fans, and I hear from wrestlers, and I hear from bookers constantly. You know, Marcus, wrestling's a very complex form of entertainment. No, it is not. It is as simple can be. You have a bad guy, you have a good guy, you have them fight, and people show up and hope the bad guy loses. That's it. Maybe a few people like the bad guy. I don't care. They show up to hope the bad guy wins, but they show up. Okay? It's good against bad. Good against evil, right against wrong. It's the easiest thing in the world, and it's the easiest thing in the world to book if you have half a brain in your head. But when you have to throw in all of these things where you say, well, this wrestler doesn't want to do that because he's afraid that that's not very woke, and he thinks that that might cause bad reaction on his Twitter feed when all of his fans say, why did you do something that undermined a bird of a foreign nation's existence? Oh, who the hell cares? It's pro wrestling. My God, if you have to be careful of everything you say, everything you do, forget it. That's the problem. You can't be that careful and have a great wrestling federation, because after a while you see these moves like a million times and you're like, okay, I'm bored of seeing the moves. Now I want to see people connect with the crowd. I want to see people actually make people angry. I want to see people who actually come out there that people love. You see what happens with Sami Zayn when he's able to just kind of connect with the crowd, right? How many wrestling matches does Sami Zayn have? A couple? In the last 6 months? Besides house shows. I'm talking about on TV or pay-per-views. Handful. Look how he connected with that crowd. Because he's allowed to come out there and show some personality. He's got some personality. The problem is when you get guys, and I'm not going to name them, but you get guys who say, I'm not an entertainer. I am a professional wrestler. What the fuck do you think a professional wrestler is? That's why you're not connecting with the crowd. All I want to do is my 37 moves and show everyone how hard I worked in the gym. I don't want to wear any special clothing. I don't want to have any gimmick. I don't want to have any name. I'm Joe Smith, professional wrestler. Good for you. Don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out because nobody's going to care. Meanwhile, Sami Zayn can destroy you a million times over with his popularity by just coming up with the phrase Usy. Sell a freaking boatload of t-shirts, start a whole trend of people calling each other Usy, put a new word in the goddamn English language without ever even giving somebody a headlock. So the next time these I'm a real athlete. Guys think they know what pro wrestling is? You don't. Sami Zayn does. And he proved it. But let's talk about something else that's bad about the Sami Zayn thing. And that was another worst of the year. Sami Zayn losing, and I know a lot of people are going to go crazy and say I'm wrong about this. Sami Zayn losing to Johnny Knoxville was a horror show for Sami Zayn, and I'm going to tell you why. I understand they were trying to tell a story that Sami Zayn had hit rock bottom, that he'd become so desperate to try to claw his way back up to the top after a humiliating loss to an aging reality show star, that he tried desperately to cling on to the boot heels of the bloodline and become relevant again. Gotcha. I'm well aware of that storyline. Here's the problem. You will never be taken seriously as someone who could stand up to a guy like Roman Reigns if Johnny Knoxville beats you up and a midget in a diaper. And if I'm Roman Reigns, no offense to Sami Zayn, I'd say I'm not losing to you. You lost to Johnny Knoxville and a midget in a diaper. What does that make me look like? I didn't bust my ass and do all of this work so that you, a guy who lost to a midget in a diaper and an old reality show star, can beat me. I think right now, if Sami Zayn had won that match, or if that match had just been thrown out because so many people interfered or whatever the hell it happened to be, you still could have got to the same storyline, and perhaps you could have peppered it a little bit with Kevin Owens, since you're going to do this anyway, with dividing him and Kevin Owens up and making them, you know, feud for a little while. Kevin Owens should have been the guy who said, you got to get back to the old Sami Zayn. The old Sami Zayn could tear the heads off these people. Yeah, yeah, I know. You had a big match at WrestleMania, and it was a big highlight, and fans loved it and all. But Sami, you were contending for titles. Now you're fighting a midget in a diaper. You almost lost. You almost lost to an aging reality star, Sami. That's not you. That's not the you I know. That way, when Sami Zayn bounces back, Sami Zayn could be thought of as, he's serious. He's got that mojo back. He is that guy who contended for titles. And then Kevin Owens could have hit him with the line of the century. And he could have said, Sami, for all the success you think you have here in the bloodline, who's the guy who told you you needed to go back to being yourself? Was it Roman Reigns? Was it Jey Uso? Or was it me? That would have been the killer line. That would have been the one. They missed the boat. And Sami Zayn is not taken seriously. He's loved, which is great. It's great to be loved. Great that the fans are over the moon with him, taken seriously. He's not going to be a champion. He's not going to be the heavyweight champion. It's not going to happen. Might be tag team champion, but that's about all it's going to be, Tom, because at this point, you know, you can't let somebody like Roman Reigns lose to him based on that.
No, definitely not. And, yeah, that was one of the absolute worst things that I've seen in not just in WrestleMania, but pro wrestling in general in many years, because I have no idea why you would – what did it accomplish? What did Sami Zayn versus – Johnny Knoxville accomplish a non-sell of the Huluva kick, giant mousetrap that malfunctioned.
I don't, and
for all the people, and I'm sorry, guy, sorry but not sorry, for all knuckleheads, they're like, I don't know what you're talking about. That match was very entertaining. No, it wasn't. It was stupid. It wasted WrestleMania time for other matches, for other guys who worked their asses off the whole entire year, and you put Johnny Knoxville. That's what you landed on?
Well, let's also stress this point. The same people who said that was a very entertaining match said wrestling is supposed to be about athletics. I thought you were all, you know, Will Ospreay fans. I thought you were all Kenny Omega fans. Oh, no, don't give us that. Just give us the great move. a giant mousetrap and a midget in a diaper, and you guys are happy. That's why I don't take that seriously. Everyone wants to be entertained. And if you did that match with an undercard guy, if you did it with R-Truth, if you did it with, you know, whoever, I would have said, yeah, that was funny as hell. I mean, how bad could it hurt him? He's not going anywhere anyway. How bad could it possibly hurt him? But, man, with Sami Zayn, see, they didn't know they were going to catch lightning in a bottle like this. It was supposed to be a very short thing with Sami Zayn. But they underestimated it. And now they're paying for a very rash decision to throw Sami Zayn to the wolves in that WrestleMania match because they know deep down inside, at least for another 6-8 months to a year, the fans are not going to forget that, and we can't take him seriously as a top guy who's beating top-level talent.
Right, and frankly, if they hadn't have done it, it would have made the whole thing about the whole name change thing even more palatable because, okay, he's still strong, he still can do it, and he gets to catch like the eventually catch lightning in a bottle as they've done, and all of a sudden, boom, they change his name, and people, I mean, we see what's happening now with the whole anticipation of the, quote, name change, right? You know?
Yeah.
The Sami Uso,
yep.
You know? They teased it Thursday night, and it didn't happen, or two Thursdays ago, whatever it was, and it didn't happen because they had the whole thing with John Cena and all that stuff come up, right? So,
yes.
So you still got that anticipatory, but it would have been even better. And look, here's the deal. Think about this. Sami Zayn is what? He's what, 210, 215 pounds maybe? What is Johnny Knoxville, about 150 pounds, soaking wet?
If, and he's 50-some-odd years old. And he don't look like he's ever lifted a weight in his life or ever gotten to a fist fight. The only gimmick is, oh, I do stupid stunts and get hurt, but I bounce back well. Okay, but that's not a fight, though. It's different to say, oh, I'm putting myself in a rolling toilet bowl and rolling off the roof and bouncing on my head on golf balls. Okay, well, great. And in a week, I'm fine. I'm going to do another thing. That's great, but that's not a fist fight where someone's beating on you. It's a totally different thing. The way I had fantasy booked that with the Kevin Owens thing, if he had won that match with Johnny Knoxville or at least got out of it with no winner, and Kevin Owens had a basically the next night or whatever, week or two down the road, said to him, I know you think that you had a nice spot at WrestleMania. I know you think that this was a good thing. But Sammy, you used to be going for titles. You used to be a guy that when someone knew they were facing you, they were like, damn, this is I really have to train. Sami Zayn could take this from me. They're laughing at you, Sammy. They're all laughing at you. I'm your friend, so I'm telling you, you got to go get back to this old Sami Zayn. You got to find that guy. That way, when Sami Zayn catches lightning in a bottle, you have that particular moment, and that would have been my moment as a writer, when the little light bulb goes off in Sami Zayn's head, when Kevin Owens has been beaten up by Sami Zayn two or three times, when the Usos have taken him out, when he's sworn his loyalty to the Brotherhood and said, I don't give a damn what happens to Kevin Owens anymore. Kevin Owens, one of his last statements can be, you just remember who told you to be who you are right now. That's when the light bulb goes off in Sami Zayn's head and he says, holy shit, what have I done? That's a moment we can all relate to, Mike. That would have been a great moment. And they just let stuff like that escape.
Absolutely, and that's the thing. Look, this whole bloodline thing is still, and, you know, I'll say it right now, and you know, this goes to my best thing in a year, it is the bloodline, you know.
No question.
It's the best thing in the year, you know, by and far, in my mind. But, yeah, it could have been even better if they hadn't screwed up Sami Zayn so much. I mean, like you said, if you want to do this, that same match with Johnny Knoxville and say, I don't know, R-Truth or even, hell, Tozawa, you know, you could have done it.
Yeah, right.
You know, yeah.
Absolutely.
You know, you could have done it with Tozawa because it's not going to hurt Tozawa. Tozawa's, you know, Tozawa's the same guy he is before he is now, you know. He's the same guy. He's still got that charisma. He's still young enough. I mean, look, for all the work he's done, what is R-Truth, 50-plus years old now?
Yes.
What is he? So
about 50 years, yeah.
Like he's 40. Because I was 40 or something. So he's got 10 years on him. You can get something out of Tozawa still. I mean, there's still work. I still think they're still working on getting something out of Tozawa. So it is what it is. Now, they screwed Tozawa up because of, you know, one of the bad things is when they took Tozawa and broke him away from Tamina. But we can talk about that later. But, yeah, that was one of the worst things is them splitting those two up.
Yeah, you know, here's another worst thing, too, is that the WWE – well, and they corrected it later, but the WWE ran so many storylines into a brick wall and never finished. Now, they're starting to not do that anymore, so that's really, really good, so we can be happy about that. But, man, there were that whole thing with Tozawa and, of course, Reggie, Dana Brooke. I mean, where the hell did that go? Nowhere. Nowhere at all. The Ezekiel thing, where the hell did that go? It went nowhere at all. They were running things right into a brick wall constantly for a long time. They're starting to correct that now, which is good. I guess we'll do a couple of good ones. Let's start with the Brotherhood because I think that is the Brotherhood, the Bloodline. I think that is the best thing in wrestling this year. But I want to tell you this, and a lot of people probably would agree with me if they think hard about it. The big part of that, everyone will say, that's Sami Zayn. Hold the phone. Let me tell you what sold the Bloodline, for me anyway. And I think for a lot of people, if you think about it, Jey Uso. Go back to the beginning when it was first starting. And Jey Uso was torn between listening to his cousin and doing what he knew in his heart was right. He was brilliant. He carried that role as far as he could until Jimmy got back from being injured. Jimmy then sort of half took it over. Never did as good a job as Jay, but he had an adequate job of that. And allowed us to understand these characters are all different. They're not just the same. That's what makes the Bloodline as good as it is. That's what made the Four Horsemen as good as they were. The original Four Horsemen. They were similar, but very different. So you look at Roman Reigns. He's obviously the leader. He's the calm, cool, collected. You do what I tell you. You do it without question. You show me respect. Jay's the hothead. He wants to do the right thing, but he's always confused about what the right thing is. Should I listen to Roman? Should I not listen to Roman? Should I accept Sami Zayn? Should I not accept Sami Zayn? Should Paul Heyman be a part of this? Should Paul Heyman not be a part of this? He's always torn between what is right and what is wrong, and he's always fighting his inner demons about, oh, I don't think this is right, but I guess I'll do it. Jimmy's more the lackadaisical, if it's working and we're winning, I'm with it. Then you added Solo, who basically said, I don't give a damn whether it's right or wrong or not. My mission here is to make sure nothing happens to these titles, and that's what I'm going to do. And Paul Heyman, who obviously is his part in it, is to just do as he's told, be devious as he possibly can be, and manage the championships as well as he possibly can. Now throw Sami Zayn into the mix. A very wild, off-the-cuff type guy who just says things without thinking. And what did he do? He showed a different side of the bloodline. And this is what exactly they needed at that time. The bloodline, just as it started to get a little bit stale, got a shot in the arm from Sami Zayn. And then along comes those moments where he comes up with something like Usi and nobody can keep a straight face, even though they're trying very hard. And let me explain something to you. As a historian of old television, shows are when the cast literally can't keep a straight face. Everybody talks about, remember on Saturday Night Live when Chris Farley cracked up Christina Applegate and David Spade, they couldn't keep a straight face. Wasn't that the funniest thing you ever saw? Wasn't that wonderful? Let's watch that for the 400th time. Remember on the Carol Burnett show where Tim Conway cracked everybody up and one guy fell off the couch laughing and Carol Burnett, who always tried to keep a straight face, could not possibly do it, and everybody was burying their heads. Yeah. That's endearing moments. That's blurring that line a little bit between, we all know it's a show, we're trying really hard, but the little bit of our own self peeked its head out. Well, when that happens, you got the crowd. The minute that happened, and I'm going to call that one of the best moments of the year, that Usi moment humanized the bloodline to the crowd. And from this moment on, they're legend. And that's Sami Zayn who did that. And I'm not a big Sami Zayn fan, but he did that. And that's going to endear them. That's a lifetime thing now. They can run this bloodline thing for years off of that, because that's the moment when I said to myself, the fans have now just related to them in a way that they are no longer a wrestling character. They're human beings. And as soon as you get that, where they think you really are that person, you got them, Mike. And that was the moment for me when I said, oh, man, the bloodline, that's the key moment of the year for them.
I mean, I'll put it to you this way. I've talked about this story about Ed O'Neill, and what happened one day when he went to get a job on, like, a movie or something, and it was outside of this agent's office or this casting director's office was a billboard of him as Bundy on Married with Children. And he looked up at that billboard and said, how in the hell am I going to get this part if they see me as this guy, right? Which at the time was his right to think, you know, because all they knew of him was Bundy, you know. So yeah, it happens. And look, I go back to certain things like on Seinfeld when the whole thing was yada yada yada, you know, type of thing. You know,
there are certain shows
where certain things happen where it becomes a part of the lexicon. It becomes a part of everyday life. And that was one of those things where, and this is another one of these things, Usi, you know? I mean,
it really is, Mike. It really is. And it humanizes the worker to the crowd. We all know they're playing characters. But when we all share that moment where something funny happens and you say, they can't even keep a straight face. Even they can't keep it straight. It's not possible. You all shared that moment together. That endears you to those workers. It's a key moment, I'm telling you. You can't buy that sort of connection to the crowd. You can't buy that. And you can't write it either. It just has to come naturally. So that's what a lot of key people are missing. So I think that was a big moment for them, Tom.
Yeah, absolutely. And they continue to do a good job, and they captured the audience like no other gimmick that I've ever You know, I don't really call it a gimmick, honestly. I just call it, like, coming out and being that they're pretty much being themselves. If you can't, if you didn't see Roman Reigns crack up when Sammy slipped and said Usi, I cracked up. I thought that was hilarious because it's not even a word. And it cracked up Roman Reigns. I'm sure that Jimmy Uso and Jey Uso were holding the belts in front of their faces, trying not to laugh. That's being themselves. That's not a gimmick. For all intents and purposes, I know it's wrestling, but they were out there. They're right out there every week being themselves. And I think that's what's capturing the audience, is because it's not a silly gimmick, where it's going to run into, as we say, a brick wall. It's never going to run into a brick wall as long as they keep up doing what they're doing.
And you know what else it does, Tom? It helps when Sammy and the bloodline break, because the fans are going to be crushed by that and they're going to root the hell out of Sammy for it. Now, if Roman Reigns was just, I'm mean, and Sami Zayn has earned my trust, but whatever, it wouldn't be the same as those moments where you say, remember when they cracked up accidentally, and remember when they were sharing this, remember when they were talking about going to the Waffle House? It makes it seem real. It makes it seem more real. Nobody's just pure evil. You know what I mean? Nobody's just pure evil. You'd be the most evil person in the world. And you still have moments where you're going to laugh. You still have moments where you're going to do something nice. And so sometimes wrestling characters take themselves so seriously that we can't take them seriously. And we're like, well, it's obviously a character, because what are they doing? They never do anything good. They just hang around and do evil. What can I do that's evil now? Who lives their life like that? So, and I think Roman Reigns was coming off extra strong as, like, I'm a mafia boss and I have no sense of humor and all I care about is success. And Roman's good at that, and he knows he had a good thing. And I think he thought, if I let down my guard for a moment, I'm going to lose this really good thing. And when he did let down his guard accidentally and realized it didn't hurt me, in a matter of fact, it seems to have helped me. I think he can now play that character better, Todd, and I think it's a more realistic character.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said about the bloodline thing, that episode from like a month ago or two, when they did that on SmackDown when Jimmy, was it Jay, was trying to hold his try to hold his laughter and try to keep a straight face, he couldn't. He had to cover his face up, try not to laugh, try to be serious about this bloodline thing.
Yeah, it was, again, it humanized them, and it made their characters seem like their characters are real. I think that was what Mike's point was about the Ed O'Neill thing. If you just say, well, Ed O'Neill is not Al Bundy, I mean, he's a very serious actor, he just happened to play a role. The next time you watch Married with Children, you're apt to say, yeah, he's a good actor. He's not really like that. But the best actors are people that you say, that's them. You think that's them. It may not be, but you think it is. Okay? And now we see, like, Roman Reigns and Jey Uso and Sami Zayn, and you really think, well, that is them. And they, maybe it's farthest from the truth. But that's what the fans think. And when you have the fans thinking you really are your character, man, you can't do better than that. You can't do better than that. So that's got to be one of the biggest moments of the year, too. Plus, Mike, he barely got the words out of his mouth, Usi, and with the crowd reaction, somebody instantly said, go tell production to start Usi t-shirts.
Yeah, and the Usi shirt. And then, of course, came, oh, we're going to change his name.
Yep,
and that got
right. Absolutely.
Know?
Yeah, I mean, there's no ending to that. Now, let's talk about some other good stuff that happened. I think the emergence of AEW getting their own talent over is another one of the good things that happened this year. We're beginning to see, like, a guy like MJF, he is over. He is 100% over. And he's bringing some fun back to professional wrestling by saying things that, you know, some people would not want to say or would not want to have to say. He seems like he shoots from the hip a lot, so he seems like a sort of a real character to people. And I think he's brought some of that old school heel personification back to it. And he now can literally be thought of as an AEW superstar. I mean, you can look at Chris Jericho. There's no bigger star in the whole AEW than him. He's not an AEW superstar. He's a wrestling superstar. But he made his name not there. Same way with John Moxley. Same way with a lot of people that's over there. But not MJF. So the emergence of MJF, Sammy Guevara, Jungle Boy, Darby Allin to an extent, a couple of others. From the women's division, obviously, Britt Baker. And you start to say, this is probably the best thing in AEW this year, is they've gotten away from, we're going to buy talent that already has a big name. And they're starting to get into that territory now where it's, we are going to make big names out of the guys we have. That's key, I think, to their future, Mike.
Absolutely. Now, it does help that, you know what's helping Jungle Boy out a lot is that Christian is there actually helping to develop Jungle Boy. That's what you want. Just like for a while, Sting, and I don't know if he needs him anymore, but Sting was helping to develop Darby Allin.
Yeah. No, that's what you're supposed to use these guys for. I'm with you on that. That's exactly what you're supposed to use them for. But for a while, I was really thinking, how long is it going to be before AEW stops leaning on the crutch of already made superstars and begins to say, here's some superstars we made that are now drawing for us? And I was beginning to think it was never going to happen. Now I take a look at it and say, no, it's happening. I'm seeing the emergence of these guys now. It took longer than I thought it might, but I do see an emergence here. So I think that's a good thing, Tom. I think we are now going to be able to, maybe 2-3 years from now, say, well, this is an AEW original who's now a huge superstar.
Yeah, no, agreed. I think, honestly, it's too little too late. They should have done this from the very beginning to build the guys that they have, you know, so to speak, homegrown, their own guys, and brought in the bigger names to draw, of course, but to get the, you know, the younger guys over. What do you think NXT is? Why is the New Day down in NXT, their tag team champions? That's to develop the guys that are down there. New Day's already big stars, but they brought them down to NXT, not because they're not doing anything with them on WWE. It's because they want to develop the NXT guys that are younger and hungry and are eventually going to go up to the main roster. They're doing everything right in that aspect of WWE. AEW just brought in these, like, every week you see so-and-so is AEW. So-and-so is AEW. What are you doing with them? Ask Keith Lee.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Ask Miro. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, the Usy thing, I do want to say one more thing about that. The Usy thing, Mike, you know what that reminds me of? That's this year's Rusev Day.
Yes, absolutely. And hell, if we're to take Lana at her word, and I have no reason not to, that Rusev Day is coming back in some form or fashion. Hell, I'll be happy with that too. But yeah, this is Rusev Day all over again. I mean, how long had we said that anything that the New Day touched turned to gold? Unicorn horns, pancakes, cereal boxes with T-shirts in it. You know, take your pick. Whatever it was, it turned to gold. And now they got something else that's turned to gold. And this is This is a – we've talked about factions in wrestling and some of the most successful factions. This Bloodline thing is a successful faction, and it could be a successful faction for the next God knows how long, and even when they eventually decide we're going to pull the trigger on Naomi, or hell, even pull the trigger on The Rock's daughter being in the Bloodline. You know?
Yeah, I think the Bloodline is probably like this generation's four horsemen. I think that, you know, when we're all old and gray, they're still going to say, remember the Bloodline? That, like, we people say, remember the horsemen? Remember the, you know, NWO? It's going to be that. It's probably going to be superior to the NWO. It's more like the horsemen. It's going to be legendary. It really is. They caught lightning in a bottle with that. They really, really did. And they did it the right way. They introduced one person at a time. They didn't say, here's all the faction members. And they all have no personality except one of them. They didn't do that. They let it just be Jay and Roman. And then it was Jay, Roman, and Jimmy. And then it was Jay, Roman, Jimmy, and Sammy. And then it was Jay, Roman, Jimmy, and Sammy, and here comes Solo. They did it perfectly. It wasn't like the NWO where every week it's, I'm NWO. No, I'm NWO. There's popcorn vendors ripping off their shirt and they're NWO. It was too much. This was perfectly done. Now we're going to get to match of the year. This is tough for me because I have a couple of them. But I'm going to go with my gut. And my gut says that my favorite match of the year was probably Sheamus and Gunther, because they just beat the hell out of each other. And it came at a time when I was really losing a little of my passion for pro wrestling, because I was just getting sick of flippity-floppity moves and people obviously not really hitting each other and people missing by a mile and selling stuff and people just barely touching them with a clothesline and they're flipping upside down. And I'm saying, God, how much of my imagination do I have to suspend my disbelief in? You know, I remember when wrestling was hard-hitting in the days of, you know, old, and I don't see why we're at this stage where everybody's got a pity-pat with each other. And along comes Walter, Gunther, whatever you want to call him, and Sheamus, and they beat the hell out of each other. And I didn't think you were going to see anything better than Drew McIntyre and Sheamus, because they beat the hell out of each other, too. But no, man, Walter and Sheamus beat the hell out of each other. And during that match, I said to myself, this is why I love pro wrestling. This is the way pro wrestling's supposed to be. So there might be better technical matches. There might be more exciting matches. But for me, this was the match of the year, Mike, because it restored a little of my belief that pro wrestling can be great again. So I'm gonna go with that one. How about you?
You know what? I would go with that one, but I have to go with the first time Ronda and Raquel Rodriguez fought, because Ronda and that match showed us that, one, Ronda had turned a corner, number one, and number two, that she can now work well with just about anybody, and she made Raquel look like she made her look like she belonged in that match for that championship. And that's what you want out of a person, out of your champion. You want her, if you've got a plan for this particular person to be something, you want that. You want her to look that, you want that person to look that good so that you can say, okay, next time she's going to get it. Or next time, she's not too far away from being one of your top people, you know. And that's why this
yeah,
is
that was, I think that was the second time she fought her. She fought her once before when Ronda was a face. And she just had an open challenge. But, but that one was kind of forgettable match. That was one of my best female TV matches. for sure. That was a great match for a TV match. My runner-up was maybe the women's War Games match. I know people said it was a botch fest. I don't think it was a botch fest. And I didn't like the fact that Becky Lynch pinned Rhea Ripley clean. That was a mistake. But, man, the action in that match. That was probably be my favorite female match of the year. But you're right. This was a groundbreaking match for two reasons. One is it proved that Ronda Rousey absolutely now is a qualified professional wrestler. And anybody who says different has no idea what they're talking about. You go back and look at her early matches when she first started, or even when she came back the second time. And that match, and it's day and night. The light has now went off. She is very good at this. And the second thing is, Raquel Rodriguez came out of this looking like she is going to be a champion at some point. And actually gained respect from the loss, which doesn't happen much. So that is a great match. Let's go to Tom. Tom, what was your favorite match this year?
Oh, I'm going to catch a lot of slack for this, but that's okay. I don't like the way they built it up. I thought it was silly. But, man, the selling and the facial expressions and everything that happened in that match, regardless it was his second match, was Roman Reigns versus brain fart, sorry, not Jake Paul.
Oh, Logan Paul.
No, Logan Paul, thank you. Yeah, Logan versus Roman at the Crown Jewel was everything they sold about Logan Paul's punch that can live up to the Superman punch. If you get in the way of that, that might be all over for you. This is only this guy's second match. You might want to watch out. And they sold that. That's one of the biggest things they sold about that match, and we were all, like, salivating, waiting for it. If Logan Paul did not get hurt in that match, then he's going to be back, obviously. He signed a big contract, but that was
right.
one of the top things for me because as a fan, it told me a story. We're like, I don't know who's going to win. I don't know if there's going to be something that's going to happen where Roman Reigns gets in the way of that punch and like, uh-oh, could it be a fluke? Could it be a transition thing? We didn't know. Yes, it's Crown Jewel.
Well, I'll tell you this. You're not going to catch any flack from me on that because that match not only lived up to my expectations, it way, way exceeded them. And I had decent expectations. I knew he was a decent athlete. I did not know he was this. And when I watched it, I said, my God, what am I watching here? And there were moments in that match. I 100% admit that they marked me out, and I said, I guess he's winning. They're going to let him win this thing in Saudi Arabia. I really thought they were. There were moments in that match where I was convinced, Jesus Christ, he's going to win. So, yes, I was on the edge of my seat in that match. That was definitely a match of the year candidate. There's no doubt about that. And Roman Reigns did an excellent job, and they did centrally focus on Logan Paul has a fighter's chance. He has a very, very strong right hand. And even Paul Heyman said, try not to get caught by it. I mean, he's got a strong enough punch that, you know, one lucky punch and, you know, and Roman Reigns kind of poo-pooed it and said, I had one lucky, he's going to get a punch. So when the punch came, I'm like, Jesus, that's the way he's losing. It definitely was well-booked, but better than well-booked, it was perfectly executed. And if it was just perfectly executed by Roman, I'd say, well, you know, he has been at this a long time. But when one of the guys responsible for having it perfectly executed is a rookie, that don't happen too much. And you're right, if he hadn't gotten hurt, the momentum he had from that match, that's maybe one of the worst things that happened in wrestling this year. Because losing that momentum, I hope he can get it back. I hope he can get it back. Because now we're not shocked how good he is. I was astounded how good he was. And that momentum was ready to carry him to being a huge, huge part of the WWE universe. And the time off didn't help, does not help. So, yeah, I'm with you. That is definitely a great match of the year candidate. Todd, gave you some time to think about it. What's your match of the year?
I got to say the Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins' Hell in the Cell match.
Oh, that's another good one. Yeah, that's another really good one. And I'll tell you why that's good. Because Cody Rhodes proved something to me. I'm not, I separate people from wrestling. I don't like Sami Zayn, but I love what he's doing in wrestling. I have met Cody Rhodes. I've talked to Cody Rhodes. Cody Rhodes is a nice guy. I can guarantee you, if you've never met Cody Rhodes, I will tell you one thing about him. He honestly, it's not an act, he honestly cares what wrestling fans think. He honestly does. That is not an act. That is not, I'm going to appease the fans by pretending I care. Uh-uh. He does. He really does. And he takes time to talk to them. And he takes time to listen to them. And he doesn't just say, oh, well, who cares what you think? You've never been in a ring. He doesn't do that. And I watched him, probably 200 people in the crowd, not even, 125 people in the crowd, put on a performance like he was at WrestleMania. So I know that he loves the business, and I know that he really cares about wrestling fans. I was never a big fan of his wrestling-wise, but he proved something to me in that match. When he took off that jacket and I saw how bad that was, I said, you got to be kidding. He's not going to wrestle. This is going to be 5 minutes. This is going to be a five-minute match just to get it done with, and Seth is going to avoid anything to do with that arm or that side. And no. I mean, the promoting attitude was, it's already gone, so you can't do any more damage, so just have at it. That proved a lot to me. For anybody who says he doesn't have the guts or he doesn't have the tenacity or he doesn't have the hardcore nature to just get in there and take his lumps, you know, a lot of people kind of piled him onto this new generation of, I don't want to get hurt. If it's going to mess up my hair or it's going to possibly do, you know, cause me to get acne, please don't do that move to me. Oh, no, he's not that. He ain't that. And he proved that. So, yes, that's an excellent choice for Match of the Year. Excellent choice. Mike, what's your thoughts on that one?
Loved it. I mean, we've said it the last couple of weeks. And he's ready to come back from what I understand. It's going to be hard to get them to boo him. It's just like it's hard. It's going to get hard for them to boo Seth Rollins. So, when Cody does come back, they're gonna have to put that match between him and Rollins either on the shelf for good or on the shelf for the time being, because who you gonna boo?
I know. You know. I agree with that, and I don't think they're gonna. But I agree with you so much, but I think they're gonna plow ahead with that. We got time for one question. Let me see. Let me go through them and see what the best one is here. Bill in Albany. Tessa Blanchard, Sasha Banks, where do they end up in 2023? That's a good question, so we'll try that one. Sasha Banks, I think, is going to do AEW eventually. I really do. I think Sasha Banks is going to try that. I don't think she's coming back to WWE. Been there, done that, and I think she might have rubbed some people the wrong way in a way that they just say, look, we're not dealing with her prima donna attitude. Now, I don't know if that's a good thing, because if she does that prima donna attitude in AEW, I don't know where that's going to lead her. But I think eventually you might see her in AEW. I'm going to guess sooner than later, you'll see her return to wrestling, and if I had to guess, I'd say AEW. Tessa Blanchard, no way AEW, not after the stuff she did. They're too, like, hung up on putting a very, we wouldn't put up with anything like that here attitude. They'd never hire her. Triple H might. I have said forever, I would love to see Tessa Blanchard Charlotte Flair. You all say, you always shit on women's wrestling. You don't, you like, there's nobody wants to care. I'll care about that match. You give me Tessa Blanchard, Charlotte Flair, I'll show up to watch that. For sure. So I'm going to say she has a chance to go into the WWE, but she's her own worst enemy. And she might shoot herself in the foot again. And the WWE don't want bad publicity either. So if she ends up anywhere big, it'll be the WWE. It won't be AEW. But I'm not so sure she's going to end up anywhere big. So, Mike, we'll try your answer to this one. What do you think?
I think you're right about Sasha. She's already trademarked or whatever name she's going to use, you know. So it's not going to be Sasha Banks, but she already copyrighted and trademarked it. So it'll be AEW because she's gone over to Wrestle Kingdom, or she has already, or whatever. And so if anybody else, it's going to be some Japanese. Other than that, AEW and Tessa Blanchard, if I'm Triple H, I'd pull the trigger on that and take a chance that she's not going to bite you in the ass, you know, in terms of acting stupid. I'd take the chance just to have that match, you know?
Yeah, I would too. Absolutely would. Todd, what do you think?
Like Mike said, with Tessa Blanchard, there might be a possibility if she behaves herself in the business, maybe the WWE will hire her. But the way her behavior back in the past, I don't think so.
See, the thing about Tessa Blanchard is, it's not like, oh, I fucked up, like Sammy Guevara does and says, yeah, I know, I fucked up again and I'm sorry. And no, she's sort of like, yeah, who cares? That's the problem with Tessa Blanchard. It's not so much what she did. It's just that she really doesn't care. She's like, who cares what I did? Well, a lot of people do. One more quick one. Where is Doudrop? I don't know. That is a damn good question. Where the hell is Doudrop? I haven't thought about that. I don't remember her getting injured, Mike. Yeah, she hasn't been on TV in forever.
I don't know where that is either. And look, I mean, I thought she had some potential when I first saw her. You know, now is it that they can't find anything to do with her? I mean, she's one of the bigger, more athletic women there. You should be able to find something to do with her. It's not like what's her name that you gave a ton of things and a ton of chances to, and she's not very athletic, even though she's The Rock's cousin or whatever it is, niece or whatever she is at the time, and was hurting people and all this stuff, even though the girls in the back said, it's okay. We could plainly see that's what was happening. That's not Doudrop. Or Viper.
No.
Or whatever you want to call it.
I'm going to assume she's hurt. I have to assume she's hurt. I have heard nothing about them letting her go, so I don't think they let her go. I don't think she's wrestling in England, or not that I've heard of. She hasn't been on a skit. Her name hasn't been mentioned. My assumption is she might be hurt. I must have missed it if she was, though, because I don't recall any report saying she was hurt. But, man, that's a damn good question, Todd. Have you heard anything about where Doudrop might possibly be?
Is she, like you said, we don't know if she's hurt or what. Maybe she's on making her – demoted her to wrestling on main event there. You never know.
Maybe. That's true. I don't watch main event, but you'd think at least once they'd show up on a – just once in a women's battle. Let's see if she shows up in the women's Royal Rumble. If she shows up in the women's Royal Rumble, then she's not hurt. If she doesn't show up in the women's Royal Rumble, I'm going to look into this. That is an excellent, excellent question. I'm glad somebody wrote that in because I had forgotten about her. I have no clue. No clue. Anyway, folks, thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed yourself, and we will be back here on Tuesday with the Monday Night Raw Report.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. WrestleChat Radio.